SportsGrid.com. Betting insights and entertainment at your fingertips 24/7 as our team covers the most important topics in sports wagering. Real-time odds, predictive betting models, expert picks, and more. Want the edge? Then get on the grid. SportsGrid.com.
You're listening to Football Full Circle with Joe Lisi and Ben Stevens.
God, right here as a new week begins on Football Full Circle. That is FFC, all a part of the Sports Grid Radio Network and Sirius XM Channel 159. And that is the mastermind of the pigskin, Joe Lisi. I am Ben Stevens. Plenty to break down up until 1 p.m. Eastern time today, Joe, as more and more teams, more and more rookies are starting to show up to training camp. And as of end of day tomorrow on a Tuesday, 30 of our 32 NFL clubs will have reported to training camp. By the end of Wednesday, all 32 NFL teams around the league will have showed up for training camp. And as we start today, Joe, sometimes it's not about who reports to training camp, but who is not there. Plenty NFL news and notes on this Monday here on Football Full Circle before we get you set with some college football news as well.
Yeah, I mean, college football, I mean, the latest is BYU, ex-BYU quarterback Jake Retzlaff transfers now potentially to Tulane. You mentioned the training camp starting to open. We have the game in just about a week and a half between Detroit and L.A. That's a pretty good indication about where those teams are in terms of the second and third teamers. And we get football in July. That's what it's all about. You know, for the NFL, training camps, the storylines, teams jockeying for position and potentially looking for a Super Bowl championship to challenge the likes of the Philadelphia Eagles. And on the flip side, the Kansas City Chiefs, still potentially the two best teams in their respective conferences. And we'll see how it plays out in just about 5 months from now.
Yeah, a lot of college football news to break down, a lot of NFL news to get started with as well. And Joe, as we said, 30 of 32 teams will report to training camp by the end of tomorrow. The two that will not, but will join everybody on Wednesday in the fold, the Atlanta Falcons and the Pittsburgh Steelers. Let's start with some news, of course, out of Cincinnati. The Bengals sent their rookies to training camp on Saturday. The veterans show up tomorrow. All eyes will be on Trey Hendrickson, the talented edge rusher, the NFL sack leader the last 2 years, and last season individually with 17. Will he be there when the Bengals show up? More than likely not, as he is still hoping for a new contract. How about the rookie edge rusher, the 17th overall pick out of Texas A&M, Shamar Stewart? Did he show up on Saturday? No. He did not, as he remains the only first-round rookie yet to sign his rookie contract. And Joe, longtime executive in Cincinnati, Duke Tobin, that has worked closely with the Brown family and under owner Mike Brown, who is the executive, the front office guy. Basically, he is the de facto GM for this Bengals franchise, saying, quote, in terms of Shamar Stewart, quote, he needs to be here. I would encourage him to be here. He's listening to the advice he's paying for. I don't understand the advice. We're treating him fairly. End quote. That doesn't necessarily, Joe, seem to be two sides that are close to getting a deal done.
No, and again, we talk about these dominant college players and moving on to the NFL. It's one thing to have a great college career. It's another thing to be an all-pro or lead the league in sacks like Trey Hendrickson, right? I mean, Shamar Stewart has yet to play an NFL down, and he's holding out and really holding the team hostage at this point. And it comes down to the bottom line. Do you want to play football or don't you? Do you want to play in the league and do you want to make an impact for your respective team, or do you want to sit out and just create a narrative and a storyline that just makes you a negative, right? It really comes down to that factor. At some point, you have to push everything aside and say, you know what? I'm going to play football for the Cincinnati Bengals. They took a shot on me. I'm going to take a shot and I want to help this team win an AFC championship, or just check out and move on, because the longer that this plays out, it's only detrimental to the team and those veterans that are on there looking for a championship.
Sure, but also in the context of what Shamar Stewart is dealing with, he is standing up for what he believes in his contract and his representation. In the Bengals being adding in a new default clause that they did not to their previous two first-round selections. And that default clause, if Shamar Stewart were to get in any on or off the field trouble, would cause Shamar Stewart to lose all of the guaranteed money that is a part of a rookie first round deal. That 31 of 32 NFL teams and their draft selections have been able to iron out. This is not about money per se. They are not negotiating $1 million here or there. This is not about the length of a contract. Again, since 2013, when the rookie wage scale went into place, you know exactly how much you are making over the entire duration of your four-year deal with a fifth-year team option. You know that it is fully guaranteed being a first-round pick as well. It is the default clause that the Bengals decided to add in this year that would protect them through loopholes with a certain sense, Joe, I would say, of non-belief in the guy they decided to draft in the first round. Is it great for either side from a football perspective? No. But does it make a ton of sense from a negotiation perspective for the Bengals to add something, try to slipping it into the contract they did not with their previous two first-round picks? I would not say so. Does it ingratiate the idea you are welcoming in this guy that you have trusted with a first-round asset and all the value he can bring to your franchise? Absolutely not. And if it was any other team, maybe you would ask, all right, how do these things often play out? But when it is the Bengals franchise, which we have known throughout the entire duration under the Brown family, basically in the entire tenure of Duke Tobin's time, but certainly at the forefront here as of late, the contract issues they had with T. Higgins, Jamar Chase, now Trey Hendrickson, Jermaine Pratt, and currently the first-round rookie Shamar Stewart, you don't often look at all those things, five different players, and say, well, the common factor here is what? The common denominator is the Bengals front office.
Right. But again, we're still talking about an unproven commodity and a guy that can take out.
Well, proven enough,
own...
Joe. They drafted him in the first round.
Okay, but
they didn't want Shamar Stewart. Don't draft him.
Policy. But all right, but at the end of the day, these are the factors. You want to sign on the dotted line, great. If you don't move on, take out your own insurance policy, like we've seen multiple first-round selections do in terms of that protection, and move on. Either you want to play football or you don't. It's the bottom line. It's a risk type of game. And at the end of the day, I understand they didn't do it with the first two draft picks over the past couple of seasons, but the team can do that. I mean, they're the team making the parameters. So either you want to play or you don't want to play. If you don't want to play, move on and let somebody else draft you, be a free agent, and see if they offer you the same type of deal. That's what it comes down to. It's going to come down to a situation. Is he fully bought in to playing in the NFL? It can't just be about the money. It's got to be being able to play at an elite level. He hasn't shown that right now. I don't care what he did in Texas A&M. And we're talking about Joe Burrow, Jamar Chase, and T. Higgins that played in a Super Bowl already. What has Shamar Stewart played? He hasn't even played in a national championship game.
Well, are the Bengals bought in to being a true Super Bowl contender? My answer to that question would be no. Because when you're awful defensively and you're not willing to improve, I think your argument, Joe, would stand the test of time, perhaps, or be a better one if the Bengals did not have previous issues in their contractual negotiations, or even currently, if they had paid Trey Hendrickson, a guy that played in that Super Bowl with them, that had played in the AFC Championship game with them, that then went out there and said, all right, you want me to prove it? I will, in terms of production, leading the NFL in sacks a year ago. But even that guy that has done anything that you could say for Shamar Stewart, hey, you need to be a proven commodity, Trey Hendrickson has, and the Bengals are still saying, we're good.
But that's still up to the team, though, Ben. I mean,
for sure. Then it's up to the player to make the decision necessary for them. But, Joe, if the team can do that, so can the player. But it seems as though you're taking the team's side.
Why are we giving the benefit of the doubt to the player? I'd rather give the benefit of the doubt to the team. You have to prove yourself in the NFL. If you haven't proven yourself.
And these guys have. And yet you still give the benefit of the doubt to the team.
But they signed three of the four. They signed three of the four, didn't they?
Except the guy maybe most necessary to do something they could not do last year, which
that's
was make the playoffs, despite the best offense in the NFL. So that's
we'll
why the
see.
Team loses the benefit of the doubt to me. They're not a serious business model. More on Football Full Circle next.
SportsGrid.com. Betting insights and entertainment at your fingertips 24-7 as our team covers the most important topics in sports wagering. Real-time odds, predictive betting models, expert picks, and more. Want the edge? Then get on the grid. SportsGrid.com.
You're listening to Football Full Circle with Joe Lisi and Ben Stevens.
Live right here on Football Full Circle, it is FFC. Look at that face. Normally there's a smile on that face.
It is
not
a
right
smile.
Now with our conversation around Shamar Stewart and Mr. Pro Business, Pro Owner Joe Lisi, never fighting for the little guy and back in the Bengals front office. You would think this guy was born in Cincinnati and not Brooklyn. And might be besties with Mike Brown the way he discusses this situation. But Joe, I guess we can continue that conversation perhaps tomorrow when Trey Hendrickson, a very proven commodity at the highest of all high levels in the NFL, doesn't show up. And I look forward to your argument there. Let's talk about another edge rusher who did get paid because his franchise works well and his franchise has had success. That's the Kansas City Chiefs. George Karlaftis, the first round pick for KC back in 2022 out of Purdue at the end of his third NFL season, entering year number four, receives a contract extension. His second deal with the Chiefs, a 4-year, $93 million deal. That's about $23.25 million per season in AAV. Karlaftis paid for his production as a multiple Super Bowl champion, multiple times Super Bowl champion, 24 and a half sacks the last 3 years for Karlaftis. He gets a payday and a second contract in the NFL, Joe, with the Chiefs.
Yeah, I mean, former Purdue Boilermaker that has stepped up and been a mainstay with Chris Jones for that defense, and Spagnuolo utilizes him to the best of his ability. You talked about 24 and a half total sacks, 8 a year average out. That really is an important factor if Kansas City is going to challenge, not just in terms of the AFC West, but a championship and a Super Bowl contention. He's a younger player. He's been potentially injury-free throughout his career, and that's important moving forward. He's very good at run support as well. So we talk about Kansas City and elevating this team on the offensive side of the ball with those young wide receivers, Rashee Rice, Xavier Worthy, and Marquise Brown. Now the defense gets a long-term play with one of the younger defensive ends in the AFC, and that's important for them to have success this season in 2025.
Yeah, Joe, it really is, and it's a good point. George Karlaftis might not be the flashiest name that you think of when you believe in edge rushers, but what he has done from a production standpoint, 24 and a half sacks in his first 3 years, but at least 7 TFLs, tackles for loss in all three of his seasons, and he's played in at least 16 games. He is a really good piece for this KC defensive front. So he gets paid this week. Last week, it was Trey Smith. The Chiefs show up to training camp today in St. Joe's, St. Joseph, Missouri, on this Monday. KC is in camp, both the rookies and the veterans reporting for camp today. Joe, the Chiefs, one of a few teams still that goes to like a different site than just the practice facility. Of course, the Cowboys show up to Oxnard today, their Southern California training home. The Chiefs go to Missouri Western State in St. Joseph, Missouri. And the Pittsburgh Steelers coming up on Wednesday will report to Latrobe. A lot of other places kind of right now, just the practice facility. There's something unique about living with the boys in the dorm room, all focused in on training camp, getting ready for a new football season. KC does that. George Karlaftis gets paid. Lisa Guy, something we agree on. Maybe we don't agree on the Bengals and Shamar Stewart. Something we have agreed on for a very long time. Will Levis was not an NFL caliber quarterback. Will Levis certainly in the 2023 draft cycle should have never been brought up as a top five or top 10 pick, probably not even a first rounder. He was the second pick of round number two by the Titans. He made multiple starts both in his rookie year in 2023 and was the week one starter for Tennessee last year and was atrocious. He was placed on the bench. He dealt with a nagging shoulder injury. Well, Joe, we got word today that Will Levis is electing to undergo season-ending shoulder surgery already as the Titans report to training camp tomorrow. Will Levis is going to miss the entirety of 2025. Now, you might be saying to yourself, oh, wow, was he in a quarterback battle with Cam Ward? Absolutely not. Cam Ward was going to be the starter for the Titans by the time he became the Midas Bunny favorite to go first overall back in late February. Will Levis might not have even made the roster, but probably would have been a backup at best. Levis now undergoes surgery, will miss the entirety of this year. we'll see what his future holds in 2026 and beyond.
Yeah, I mean, the only argument or debate that you can make is why so late? What, you know, if it is a nagging shoulder injury and you knew that you were dealing with this towards the end of the regular season, and I understand you potentially wanted to do it the natural way, but if you're serious about your career and you're serious about a potential roster spot, not just with Tennessee, but maybe with another football team, why not get it done sooner rather than later? That is the one concern, especially if you're going to be a backup or in a potential battle. What if Cam Ward does go down potentially with an injury? You would be next man up to help your football team. So why wait until right before camp to get this done, to miss the whole regular season? I mean, maybe he's getting ready for next year. But again, from a career perspective, if you were serious and dialed in about that shoulder and being healthy for the start of camp, I mean, here we are mid-July and you're having it done. It's a little late, in my opinion.
I would agree, Joe, right? Again, was he going to factor into that starting role? No, it's Cam Ward. But to Joe's point, what happens if Cam Ward gets injured? Now the guys on the roster, I believe, are Brandon Allen and Tim Boyle, who are some veterans that somehow, some way have jobs in the National Football League. But to your point, Leezy guy, not necessarily even the upside of Will Levis, although I don't believe there's much upside on Will Levis as it is. I don't want to say Joe and I were correct from the very jump, but we were, right? We knew that this guy, based on his production in college, would not translate to the NFL level. We'll see. You know, the 2026 campaign, Joe, will be his final year under his rookie deal for the Tennessee Titans. Could they look to ship him away? Hey, he's got a healthy shoulder now. Give us a seventh round pick at some cash and we'll send you Will Levis. Maybe. I don't really expect that to be the case. It is Cam Ward's team. If for whatever reason that is derailed because of injury, the Titans season is going to be derailed and Will Levis probably was not the guy to save it. Again, are Brandon Allen and Tim Boyle? No. Will Levis, though, certainly not that option. The Titans' win total is 5.5. The over has the juice. We'll see what Cam Ward has in Brian Callahan's system in his second year as the head man in Nashville. Let's talk some college football news, huh? We'll do that next.
SportsGrid.com. Betting insights and entertainment at your fingertips 24/7 as our team covers the most important topics in sports wagering. Real-time odds, predictive betting models, expert picks, and more. Want the edge? Then get on the grid. SportsGrid.com.
You're listening to Football Full Circle with Joe Lisi and Ben Stevens.
The month of July is a football month. 30 of our 32 NFL teams report to training camp by tomorrow. The final two, the Falcons and the Steelers, on Wednesday. And Joe, this week, of course, we'll continue the media day circuit around CFB. ACC media days in Charlotte. Big Ten media days in Las Vegas. Yeah, in Las Vegas. Those both start tomorrow. We'll have more group of five leagues make their way into the media day circuit as well. And some news for a strong group of five league in a variety of ways on this Monday afternoon. Joe, within the last hour, big breaking news. Now, former BYU quarterback Jake Retzlaff has verbally committed to transfer to Tulane. As Pete Thamel of ESPN reports, the school has spent more than a week doing a vetting process, including the university's Title IX office examining the case that resulted in Retzlaff withdrawing from BYU. If you do not know anything about this situation, just a reminder here, Joe, before we get to the football aspect of Retzlaff now in New Orleans. Jake Retzlaff led BYU to 11 wins last year, but was going to likely face a 7-game suspension for violations to BYU's honor code that stemmed from a sexual harassment case against Jake Retzlaff, a civil suit against Retzlaff for the accused and alleged rape of a woman dating back to 2023. In court filings, Joe, to prove his innocence of any sexual assault allegations, Retzlaff admitted to premarital sex, which is the violation to BYU's specific honor code. Of course, it is a Mormon university. Thus, BYU as a school was set to hand down a 7-game honor code suspension to Jake Retzlaff. This is his final year of eligibility in college football. It would sideline him for more than half of his final season in the collegiate ranks. However, soon after that news was reported a few weeks ago, Joe, later on in that week, the civil suit was dismissed with prejudice by both parties, meaning any legal affairs that Jake Retzlaff was facing had now come to a close. The honor code suspension was still out there. Jake Retzlaff withdraws from BYU as a school, did not officially enter the transfer portal because he gave up his scholarship at BYU, and Joe is set to attend Tulane this upcoming fall as a walk-on and, of course, compete for the quarterback job with the Green Wave. Jake Retzlaff is headed to the Big Easy.
Well, you talk about a complete 360. You go to BYU where you can't party at all, and now you're going to the Bayou with John Summerall down in New Orleans, you know, 365 year turnaround. But again, we talk about Tulane being that group of five team. They were on the cusp last year, and they went toe-to-toe with some of the better teams on their schedule. They could have knocked off Avery Johnson and Kansas State. They went toe-to-toe with them, and we've seen them throughout the years. I mean, he is a pure pocket passer, not as much of an RPO type of quarterback, but he can elevate that passing attack. He's walking on. He gives this team an absolute ability now to win the conference. We'll see exactly how it transpires into Tulane with Summerall, because he's a good coach. He can coach up the quarterback position. And Tulane is going to be right there, especially from the odds perspective. With Retzlaff, they could be potentially the dark horse to make the college football playoff now.
Yeah, no doubt about it, Joe. I think this is an upgrade from a pure football perspective for the Green Wave. The last few years, Tulane has been pretty set at the quarterback spot. The final few seasons under Willie Fritz, it was Michael Pratt who ended up playing in the NFL, at least sparingly, for the Green Bay Packers. Last year, it was the outstanding true freshman in Darian Mensah who then hit the transfer portal and got a large payday from Manny Diaz and the Duke Blue Devils. So Tulane was kind of going to have a couple of options at the quarterback spot battling for that starting job. And Joe, after 9 wins under John Summerall, who has one of the highest active win percentages among FBS head coaches, first 2 years of his coaching career at Troy was great there, a 9-win season and an appearance in the American Athletic Conference Championship game before ultimately losing to Army. There's a lot to like about Tulane this year. A couple of guys were battling for that spot, Joe, but now it seems as though Jake Retzlaff is going to be in the fold. Now, he's about to enter the campus in New Orleans with a very short period to learn the system, to learn the facility, to learn his teammates, to learn everything about this school and football program. We'll talk about what it means for Tulane on the other side of the break. But some big news in the American, which is now only going to be called the American. More on that next, too.
SportsGrid.com. Betting insights and entertainment at your fingertips 24/7 as our team covers the most important topics in sports wagering. Real-time odds, predictive betting models, expert picks, and more. Want the edge? Then get on the grid. SportsGrid.com.
You're listening to Football Full Circle with Joe Lisi and Ben Stevens.
So Jake Retzlaff is planning to walk on at Tulane and, of course, compete for the starting quarterback job of the Green Wave entering 2025. Here's what the QB competition currently looks like in New Orleans ahead of year number 2 under John Summerall. Kaden Samanza, Joe, who had a very successful freshman year in the MAC at Ball State, competing alongside Brendan Sullivan, former Iowa and Northwestern quarterback, more of an athlete perhaps than a pure thrower, and Donovan Leary, another transfer from the Big Ten Conference out of Illinois. You also add in Jake Retzlaff. Of those three quarterbacks, they all have various levels of experience, Brendan Sullivan and Kaden Samanza playing in games last year, but nobody has more experience than Jake Retzlaff as that starting quarterback and the production to back it up. Retzlaff leading BYU to 11 wins a season ago and getting it done, Joe, both through the air, more than 25 touchdown passes, or I believe 25 to be exact, and 6 rushing scores. No, 20 to be exact, 6 rushing scores as well. Retzlaff, a gamer that had BYU in the top 25 basically all season long, from October to the end of it. I would say, Joe, that with Retzlaff going to the Bayou, going down to the Big Easy, he probably is in line to be QB1 for Tulane when their season begins on Saturday, August 30th against Northwestern at noon Eastern time. But because of the time frame, only having just over a month to get familiar with the entire landscape, I guess it does kind of call it into question.
Yeah, it does. And, you know, I'm looking at their schedule now. Not easy. I mean, you mentioned the out-of-conference game against Northwestern. Then they face South Alabama. Gio Lopez has moved on to North Carolina, but it's still on the road. Duke, another bowl team with Manny Diaz, even though they get him at home. And then they have to go to the Grove in Oxford, which they can never beat. Ole Miss, just think about 2 years ago when they had him dead to rights with Jackson Dart, and somehow, some way, they wound up covering that game on the road. So, I mean, it's not easy. You're going to need a veteran quarterback to navigate through this schedule and then potentially challenge the, you know, in-conference type of games. But again, you know, it's winnable and manageable. Summerall is a really good coach. He's a motivator. We talked about it. He was mentioned for the North Carolina job and potentially leaping before they grab Belichick. I mean, again, they should be a bowl contender, but it's not going to be easy. If Retzlaff does get that job, he potentially can lead them to 8 or 9 wins and maybe steal the conference. But again, they're going to need that veteran leadership to do that.
Yeah, no doubt about it, Joe. But when you look at Tulane, and this was even before Jake Retzlaff is intending to walk on there. Also, that's fascinating. We'll talk about the entire circumstance in just a moment. The Green Wave were the favorites to win the AAC, which is no longer the AAC. It is just the American. An announcement today from that conference league office. Do not call it the American Athletic Conference anymore. Do not call it the AAC. Just the American. Or the American Conference, to be exact. But the American, Joe, Tulane was booked as the favorite. They played in the conference championship game last year against Army and did lose, of course, at Mitchie Stadium. But a 3-1 price on Tulane to win it this time around. I would say that's fair with all the talent that Tulane has back defensively and how aggressive John Sumrall was and his track record as a head coach as well in the transfer portal this offseason. I really like Tulane, Joe, in this spot, and I think Jake Retzlaff is an improvement, of course, at the quarterback position. Tulane at a 3-1 price to win the American makes a lot of sense to me.
Yeah, you mentioned that, right? So again, if Retzlaff gets the job, Mensah was more of a mobile dual threat type of quarterback. Yeah. They were blue collar last year. So you talk about the 3-1 price, but you know, let's take it a step further. What's their price potentially to steal it and maybe, you know, make the college football playoff? Because if you believe Retzlaff is that much of an upgrade as it relates to the passing attack, then you take a shot. I mean, look at it right now. It's plus 760, almost 8-1 to make the college football playoff. If you believe they're going to win the conference, I would rather take a shot on the 760 than I would the 3-1. Again, there's no guarantees Retzlaff wins the job and comes in and hits the ground running. But the 3-1 price, knowing what they have on the defensive side of the ball, let's push the envelope. You're almost getting almost two times the value there. You're almost 760, 8-1. That's great value to make the college football playoff.
And of course, Joe, what Willie Fritz did in his final 2 years in New Orleans, what he started to build back up even before a 2-10 season, uncharacteristically in 2021, John Sumrall has continued. What they have done now in terms of they had Michael Pratt and Tajay Spears, then they turn it over to Darian Mensah and Makai Hughes, who, by the way, did transfer to Oregon. A great piece for Dan Lanning, of course, in the replacement of Jordan James. You've got a really solid squad, I would say, once again this year. Joe, when we were looking earlier in the offseason, we were talking about win totals and CFP prices in each and every conference, what we did just a few weeks ago. Two best prices out of the American, Memphis and Tulane, despite the fact that Ryan Silverfield and his team had the fourth best price to win the conference crown. They had the same best price of plus 860 to get to the college football playoff out of the American. Now, that is Tulane by itself at the plus 760 number and Memphis at plus 880. Again, we'll see. It's a fascinating scenario because Jake Retzlaff has just over a month to get incorporated and up to speed on everything if he is even going to beat out the other guys like Kaden Samanza or Brandon Sullivan or Donovan Leary for that starting job. And Joe, it's also just fascinating, by the way, some reporting here that Sumrall, when he was at Troy, tried to recruit Jake Retzlaff and had him on campus for his visit from Retzlaff's JUCO days. But it is also fascinating because he withdrew from the school because of BYU, not the football program, but the university's honor code supposed suspension that was on its way to being handed down. So he forgoes his scholarship. He did not enter the transfer portal because the transfer portal window is not open at this moment. He withdraws from school and will go to New Orleans as a walk-on. Again, not a scholarship player. Doesn't need to be handed a scholarship. Probably has made some decent money off NIL deals. All of that, Joe, to me, is a fascinating construct because if he were to enter the transfer portal leaving BYU because he was unhappy with this proposed suspension, he wouldn't be able to join a new program right away. The transfer portal window is not open, right? So the fact that he had to withdraw from school and enroll as a walk-on kind of gives you a loophole to the whole process in a way.
It does, and he had to do it because BYU is not going to change their rules, because if they made the exception right. for Retzlaff, they would have to go back. They could open themselves up to litigation and legal cases for every decision they have made throughout the previous years, right? Why Retzlaff and nobody else? So that's why he withdraws. He finds a loophole. He walks on. If he makes the team, there you go. Everything's signed, sealed, and delivered. But, it was the right decision for Retzlaff because he was being held hostage by BYU and their policy. Not, like to your point, not the football program, but the university as a whole. And again, that wasn't going to change because if they made that decision, then you might as well just get rid of the policy. There's no reason to have a policy if you're going to bend the knee. So this is what transpires. And again, he knew what he was getting himself into. Once that situation arose, he made the decision to, obviously sustain his football career and at least play in 2025, because if he stayed there, could have been detrimental to both parties.
Yeah, no doubt about it, Joe. By the way, 8.5 the win total for Tulane and Memphis. A little bit of juice on the under for both the Tigers and the Green Wave. The highest win total in the American, that's Navy. 8.5 The over has the juice at -144. Tulane does not play Navy in the regular season, but does have road trips against UTSA and Memphis, critical at the end of October, early November. More FFC next.
SportsGrid.com. Betting insights and entertainment at your fingertips 24/7 as our team covers the most important topics in sports wagering. Real-time odds, predictive betting models, expert picks, and more. Want the edge? Then get on the grid. SportsGrid.com.
You're listening to Football Full Circle with Joe Lisi and Ben Stevens.
Live right here on Football Full Circle. It is FFC. He is Joe Lisi. I am Ben Stevens. Big news of the day. Jake Retzlaff is going to play quarterback at Tulane. Will he win the starting job right away? We shall see. Joe, as we were saying, in terms of those win totals, Tulane has the second highest in the American at 8.5. A little bit of juice on the under. They open up the year against Northwestern in New Orleans. Could it be the Brendan Sullivan revenge game against his former school? Or is Retzlaff going to start? Or could it be another guy like Kaden Samanza who comes over from Ball State? Anyway, you slice it, the Green Wave, Joe, more than a touchdown favorite, 7.5 points to be exact, against a Big Ten team in the Wildcats. Again, there is optimism this year under New Orleans. 9-win team last year under John Sumrall in the regular season. An appearance in the American Championship game against Army. This team is booked as the favorite to win the American this upcoming season.
Yeah, I mean, you talk about, especially the game in the championship against Army. I mean, the fact that it was a home game for Army, they were just checked out. I mean, watch that game. They got abused internally in terms of the trenches, and Army ran away with it in that dominating home win to win their first American championship. But Tulane's going to be there. Yeah. And you just look at the defensive side of the ball last year, right? You know, they allowed 145 rushing yards per game, only 4.4 yards per carry. But when they stepped up against bigger, more physical offense and defensive lines, they played very well. They're a disciplined type of defense, opportunistic as it relates to turnover margin. And again, as long as you do that with an above average quarterback or a veteran quarterback like Retzloff, you're going to be there. Now, the win total does, the 8.5 is important because we talk about the two out of conference games. South Alabama on the road, okay, they should win that. But Ole Miss and Northwestern are not going to be easy. Right, they lose both of those games. There, you're starting right out 10-2 at best. Again, 8.5. They should be a 9-win football team, but 8-4 might get it done. I would lean to the over, but I don't love it, Ben.
You know, it's interesting as well, Joe, and not just those two out of conference games. How about the Darian Mensah revenge game back in New Orleans, week 3 against Duke? We've got three Power Conference opponents out of the four non-con games that Tulane is going to play. You win a couple of those, you have those games be close, you're making some statements that the Green Wave should not be trifled with. And then again, Joe, you start stacking up resumes, right? Because when you think about more than likely the one representative from the Group of Five conference that will be the fifth highest ranked conference champ, or one of the five highest ranked conference champs. Technically, Boise State was the third of five highest ranked conference champs last year. You're in comparison now to the others, right? Tulane is going to more than likely not battle for an at-large spot, but you're battling for the American. And then once you win the conference championship, in comparison against teams like Boise State that are the minus money favorites to win the Mountain West. Once again, those non-conference games, either wins or, as we have often used, quality of loss, are going to be important by the time we reach early December and Selection Sunday. Very important to know. Elsewhere, Joe, Northwestern, yeah, Big Ten team. Oh, you want to say one final thing? Go ahead.
I just wanted to say, if we're talking, you know, Tulane and Memphis, who has the harder out of conference? Because Memphis has Arkansas at the Liberty Bowl. That is their hardest test at a conference. Yeah, but I'm just saying, so if you're looking at the plus 880 for Memphis and you're looking at the plus 760 to make the college football playoff for Tulane,
yep,
it's not even close. You got how many out-of-conference bowl teams? You have Ole Miss, you have Northwestern, you have Duke. And those teams are strong entering 2025. Arkansas has a win total, even though I think they could exceed that with Tavon Green, of 5.5. So it's not even close when we talk about Memphis and Tulane as it relates to the college football playoff, as it relates to the conference. It's not even close between both of those.
And again, more than likely, these two teams are not going to be comparing resumes in terms of earning an at-large spot. We know that more than likely, it will be that highest ranked Group of Five champion. So it's not only winning your conference championship against your foes, but also having a better resume when all is said and done than that of a Boise State to be likely, right? Sun Belt champs, it could be a variety of teams, Texas State, JMU, so on and so forth. Maybe a Liberty or a Western Kentucky out of CUSA. The reason I highlight that, Joe, is because when you look at the team that has the best price from a Group of Five conference to reach the college football playoff, it would be the Broncos of Boise State, right? Boise State plays at Notre Dame that first weekend of October. They have App State on the slate as well. Much like last year, Boise State was perfect outside of a 3-point loss against Oregon. That did not harm them in any way in terms of their ranking and consideration for the college football playoff. Would you take a 10-2 Boise State Mountain West champ that dropped the game during their conference regular season and that loss at Notre Dame? Would you take a 10-2 Tulane team that was perfect in the American but lost to Duke and Ole Miss? Like, those are the conversations that you then start to have by the time you get to Sunday following conference championship weekend in comparing what will now just be rankings, right? You got the five highest ranked conference champs earning the automatic bid, but it's not like, oh, now we're taking this team into consideration for an opening round bye. It's just who is ranked higher to earn one of those spots into the college football playoff.
And for Boise State, they lose 37-34 to the number one team in the nation that was undefeated.
Right.
That's a that's how good it looked on their resume. The loss was phenomenal. So if they lose to Notre Dame and Notre Dame's undefeated, well, there you go. It all comes down to, you know, quality of defeat as well. We talk about margin of victory. It's also quality of defeat of these top 25 or top 10 opponents. That'll matter as well as it breaks down to Tulane and even Memphis with the game against Arkansas.
And you wonder what the committee values, right? What if Memphis goes perfect and is 12-0? Right? Is a 12-0 Memphis team the champion of the American better than a 11-1 Boise State team that's only losses on the road in South Bend? Those will be conversations we have at a later date. Let's talk the Big Ten media preseason poll next.
SportsGrid.com. Betting insights and entertainment at your fingertips 24-7 as our team covers the most important topics in sports wagering. Real-time odds, predictive betting models, expert picks, and more. Want the edge? Then get on the grid. SportsGrid.com.
You're listening to Football Full Circle with Joe Lisi and Ben Stevens.
Big Ten Media Days start tomorrow in Las Vegas. Yeah, Las Vegas, Nevada for Big Ten Media Days. Be still my heart. It should always be in Indianapolis and or Chicago. That's a later question for a later day. Big Ten preseason media poll each and every year, Joe, released by Cleveland.com. The Big Ten as a league does not specifically release a preseason poll, but the Cleveland.com is seen as the official one. And let's start at one, because Penn State earned the most first-place votes to come in first in the Big Ten preseason poll. 11 first-place votes for the Nittany Lions, checking in at number one, even in front of our reigning national champs in Ohio State, who earned 10 first-place votes, but they check in at number two. Oregon, 3. Illinois, 4. Michigan, also earning a first-place nod, checks in at 5 to round out the top five. But the story, of course, Joe, Penn State in front of Ohio State. More first-place votes for the Nittany Lions than that of the Buckeyes.
Yeah, and it makes sense because we talk about returning starters for Ohio State. Outside of Jeremiah Smith, on the offensive side of the ball, they have all first-year starters, so that's a cause of concern. Jim Knowles moves on, right? That's another cause of concern when you talk about one of the elite defensive coordinators who, oh, by the way, happens to be roaming the sidelines in Beaver Stadium now. You couple that with Drew Aller. Love him or hate him, he's still, from an experience standpoint, him and Luke Altmaier are the two most experienced quarterbacks in all of the Big Ten. Now you couple that with Singleton and Catron Allen, the two best running backs potentially in the Big Ten. They're deserving, for on paper, to be the number one team or first place votes to win the Big Ten Conference this year with James Franklin. Now, actually executing that and stepping up and actually winning games that they should win, right? We know that they could do that, but winning against top five opponents in a big, quality, tough environment is something James Franklin hasn't done since his days in Nashville, where it was back-to-back 9-4 seasons and won two bowl games for the Commodores. So these are the questions that Penn State has to answer. Can Drew Aller, in a big game, step up against a quality top five defense? I don't know. We'll see. But again, they're deserving of the hype in the offseason because it's put up or shut up time for James Franklin and Penn State.
That is the idea, right, Joe? Not that Penn State is in front of Ohio State. We can understand it. Ohio State, despite being the reigning national champs, lost 14 guys to the NFL draft. You win a national championship, you make a deep college football playoff run, and you are a veteran-laden group. You're going to lose a lot of talented people to the National Football League. They still return a couple of key guys, maybe the two best players in the Big Ten, in Jeremiah Smith, who's probably the best wide receiver in the country, and Caleb Downs, who is a star safety and an All-American back there for the Buckeyes. But outside of that, a lot of new faces. And most notably, Joe, it's the guy throwing the ball to Jeremiah Smith in Julian Sain. You've got two-time first-time play callers, coordinators, at least In this spot, Brian Hartline will officially take over the duties as the OC and the offensive play caller for Ryan Day. We have no idea what Matt Patricia looks like collegiately, Joe. A bright defensive mind? Maybe. At least he was under Bill Belichick. We'll see if he is here in Columbus. But it's the idea, Joe, we've thrust expectation on James Franklin and company numerous times. Have they delivered? Well, they've won a Big Ten title under James Franklin. Heck, they made it to the college football playoff semifinal a year ago and had Drew Aller not look bad in that second half and in critical moments against the Irish. It might have been an all Big Ten national championship game. And all of that returning talent that you expect to just improve year over year is back. Drew Aller, Nick Singleton, Catron Allen on the defensive side, Zane Durant, denied Dennis Sutton, just to name a few up front. They have so much talent, Joe, and they had one of the best DCs in the country in Jim Knowles. But does that result in a Big Ten title? That we shall see.
Yeah, again, we know they could be 10-2, but they've never beaten really in a tough spot Michigan or Ohio State when it's counted. Look at last year. They have Ohio State and Will Howard dead to rights with a 10-0 lead in the first half. And in the second half, they can't do anything. They throw for 120 yards and they lose the game outright. I mean, that cannot happen this year for Penn State and James Franklin. Cannot.
Not? Yeah. 94-17, Joe. That's a win percentage of 85%. When Penn State is booked as a favorite, 7-25 as an underdog. And they won't be an underdog early, but maybe against the best of the best later in the year. He's Joe. I'm Ben. Show returns tomorrow. Noon Eastern time on Sports Grid Radio.